For the next 30 minutes, welcome to Old Testament Prophets with your host, Father Mitch Pacwa. In a moment, Father Pacwa.
Peace of God be with you. My name is Father Mitchell Pacwa. I'm a Jesuit priest and a professor of Old Testament at Loyola University of Chicago. And we're going through a series on the role of the prophets. And we've been dealing with the prophets in the monarchy, how they had such a strong influence on the rise of the kingship of Saul and David. But now, today we want to deal with another aspect of the role of the prophets and David. That is, the way that prophetic influence came upon the beginnings of the temple. Now, open up your Bibles to the second book of Samuel. And I'd like you to take a look at chapter 24, the very last chapter of 2 Samuel. And also, if you can find it, also the first book of Chronicles, chapter 21. Keep your finger there because that is the parallel version of this. We're going to see that much of what we find in Samuel is a little bit different than what we find in Chronicles. Even though both of them have traditions from Jerusalem and Judah, the book of Chronicles was written much, much later than Samuel. Samuel was written sometime in the 600s, in the present form we have, though the traditions that we're talking about today are definitely from the time of David. Whereas, the book of Chronicles is written much later, long after the exile, perhaps around the year 400 or so. So we'll see some differences here. Well, in this first episode we want to deal with today, there's a big difference between the chronicler and 2 Samuel. It starts off in 2 Samuel 24. The anger of Yahweh once again blazed out against the Israelites, and he incited David against them. He said, "Go, take a census of Israel and Judah." So here, for some unknown reason, we don't know what happened, but Yahweh was angry with Israel. And so he uses David to cause trouble for the whole kingdom. Now, take a look at the first book of Chronicles, chapter 21. Because here we see that it says, Satan incited David. Now, Satan rose up against Israel and incited David to take a census of the Israelites. So, on one hand, we see that Satan is given the credit for doing something evil in the first book of Chronicles. But in Samuel, the much older version, perhaps a good, maybe 500 years older, Yahweh did it. The reason is this. In the earliest stage in Israel's history, they didn't really believe in Satan yet. That was a doctrine that developed much later in biblical theology. And so, at the early stage, they just said, Yahweh does everything, and in a way, of course, they're right. Because Yahweh is the source of everything, and Satan can't do anything unless the Lord Yahweh allows him, as we see in the book of Job. So that's why they would say that difference. And so, what happens after this is, after Yahweh or Satan, depending on whether you're following the chronicler or Samuel, after they incite David to take a census, David sends his men out, and they take a census of all the people. Now, his general is Joab. It's also his nephew. Joab is the son of David's sister, Cheruiah. And Joab tells David, don't take a census. You're not supposed to do that. But David goes ahead and does it anyway. And after that, it says in chapter 24 of 2 Samuel, verse 10, but afterwards David's heart misgave him for having taken a census of the people. David said to Yahweh, I have committed a grave sin. But now, Yahweh, I beg you to forgive your servant for this fault. I have been very foolish. But when David got up the next morning, the following message from Yahweh came to him through the prophet Gad, David's seer. So here we see a prophet named Gad. Now, we mentioned him earlier on. He was helpful for David in David's early career when he was running away from King Saul. But here, he's going to help him deal with Yahweh. And the Lord tells Gad to tell David, go and say to David, thus says Yahweh, I offer you three things. Choose one of them for me to do to you. So David gets to choose his own punishment. He said, you can have 3 years of famine, or you can run 3 months away from your enemies, or you can have 3 days of pestilence or plague in your country. David thinks, it's better for me to fall into the hands of God and then into the hands of men. So instead of letting his enemies chase him for 3 months, he accepts 3 days of pestilence. And the angel of Yahweh goes among the Israelites, just as the angel of Yahweh had gone among the people of Egypt in the time of Moses, and he gives a pestilence and many people die. But then we see this important sight where the angel of Yahweh was standing beside the threshing floor of Arauna, the Jebusite. And when David saw the angel who was ravaging the people, he spoke to Yahweh. So here, David sees the angel standing on a threshing floor. And this threshing floor belongs to a Jebusite, that is, one of the old residents of Jerusalem, the Jebusites. And the angel is standing and he's got his finger pointed at Jerusalem. And then David says, Yahweh, I sinned. I did this wicked thing. But this flock, what have they done? Let your heavy hand lay upon me. So David wants himself to experience the punishment. And so that day, the prophet Gad went to David and said, go up and erect an altar to Yahweh on the threshing floor of Arauna the Jebusite. And so at Gad's bidding, David set up the altar as Yahweh had ordered him. Now I'd like to show you a couple of pictures. I have two photographs of this altar that is underneath what's now called the Dome of the Rock. And we're going to put this picture up on our viewer so you can take a look at it. And the reason is this. The archaeologists are positive that this is the threshing floor of Arauna. That is the threshing floor where David saw the angel pointing his finger and, you know, ready to destroy the people of Jerusalem. Now, this rock that we're going to show you on the hair here is just above the city of David. The city of David was down below on a stretch of rock, and up on top of the hill was this threshing floor that David saw the angel pointing his finger from. And it was on that that David built the altar of sacrifice to appease Yahweh, and afterwards that became the Jerusalem temple. Well, we're going to come back in just a minute and show you the picture of that altar, and so you can get a sense of what David was doing. And we'll be back with you, so just stay with us. Thank you. Welcome back. We're talking about how David was influenced by the prophet Gad to establish the shrine in Jerusalem, the temple site. And the temple site was chosen because David saw the destroying angel standing on this threshing floor, and the angel was about to destroy Jerusalem, but Yahweh stopped it. Now, take a look at another picture of our threshing floor. And you can see from this perspective how flat it was, that in the middle, one of those holes over there would have a pole in it and an animal drag across a big heavy board to grind out grain. But later on, this became the altar of sacrifice. David built an altar on top of this rock, and then this rock became the altar of sacrifice for the Jerusalem temple. And blood from the animals would go down that hole to a cave right below it. And as a matter of fact, still inside that cave, there is a little channel, some little pieces of pipe, so that the blood could wash out from underneath that altar and out into the Kidron Valley. And you can still see that if you go to Jerusalem. Now, David continued to put all kinds of building materials near that rock, because this was to be the chosen spot for his altar. Why? Because Jerusalem was saved from the destroying angel. Even though the angel that brought pestilence to the rest of the country around now was spared against Jerusalem. Jerusalem was saved. And this gives rise to a number of things, especially something we'll see in the prophet Isaiah and other prophets as well, that Jerusalem is the sacred city of God because God stopped his angel from destroying the city. This becomes a very important tradition. But now, if we turn back to Chronicles 21, we're going to see that David did all kinds of preparations. And there's, again, a difference between Chronicles and 2 Samuel 24, because 2 Samuel 24 is an appendix to the whole book of Samuel. They didn't know where exactly to put this story of the threshing floor. But the chronicler did put it in order. And not only does he put it in order, but he also tells us all of David's preparations for getting building materials, wood, cedars of Lebanon, stone, stonemasons, gold, silver, all this stuff, so that he can have his son Solomon build the temple. But there's more. We see that along with having all the material gathered together, David does something very important. He gets the priests organized for the Jerusalem temple, making sure that they belong to the right families, especially the family of Zadok and Abiathar. Those are his two high priests. Abiathar was, as you remember, originally from Shiloh. His grandfather was Eli, the same priest in the time of Samuel. And his father was one of the two sons of Eli, Phinehas, and this little boy escaped with his life. His mother and nurse got him away from when the Philistines attacked. And he also got away from the city of Nob when Saul killed all the priests of Nob. And he became David's follower and David's high priest from the north. But Zadok, another priest, was from the south. And along with the priests, who were from the family of Aaron, we also have other Levites, lots of Levites, that David organizes to take care of cleaning the temple and all the other chores. But one of the chores that are dearest and nearest to David's heart was that of being singers. David also organized some of the Levites into choirs. And we see this in the book of Chronicles, in chapter 25, he says in chapter 25, verse 1, "For the liturgy, David and the senior army officers set apart the sons of Asaph, of Heman, and of Yeduthun, prophets who accompanied themselves with lyre and harp and cymbal. And a list was made of these with duties to perform." Now we see a number of things going on here. First of all, some of these families are going to show up, like Asaph and Yeduthun. They're going to show up in the Psalms. Okay? We're going to see their names at the head of some of the Psalms because they wrote some of them. And sometimes we see a psalm is to David. Now, as a matter of fact, your translations might say by David. But as I explained in my course on the Psalm, my series that I did on the Psalms for EWTN, that it also means for David or dedicated to David. And some of them are by David perhaps, and others are also dedicated to David. That's what it says literally in Hebrew, Le David, dedicated to David. And these people, like Asaph and Heman and Yeduthun, had dedicated some of the Psalms to David. But also, notice something else that we've seen earlier. Remember when King Saul was anointed by Samuel to be the king, the first time he was anointed? How the prophets had been accompanying themselves with music. They played instruments, and the music helped them in dancing. And we see that the Levites also do that. The Levites have lyres and harps and cymbals to help them in rhythmic dancing in the temple. And they'd move faster and faster and faster, and the dancing would help them experience the Spirit of the Lord. But also notice this in the text, that they were also called prophets. In the Chronicler, according to the book of Chronicles, the Levites are also known to be prophets, and they have a prophetic role. Now, what does that mean? Where does that show up? Well, to understand it, let's take a look at the book of Psalms. So open up your book of the Bible to Psalm 2. Now, Psalm 2 is what's called a royal psalm because it was used by the kings. And Psalm 2 in particular was used by the kings at their coronation. And we see in Psalm 2 that there are different people speaking. There are prophets and there are priests. So it says, probably a priest is speaking this part. Well, maybe a prophet. Why this uproar among nations? Why this impotent muttering of pagans? Kings on earth are rising in revolt. Princes plotting against Yahweh and his anointed, that is his king. And then somebody speaks for those enemy kings. Now let us break their fetters. Now let us throw off their yoke. In other words, the foreign kings are saying, let us throw off the yoke and fetters of David. And then another priest says, the one whose throne is in heaven sits laughing. Yahweh mocks them. And then angrily he addresses them. In a rage he strikes them with panic. And now a prophet, one of these Levitical prophets, would speak. And is be speaking in the name of Yahweh. This is my king installed by me. On Zion, my holy mountain. So Yahweh speaks through a prophet that this king from the family of David is Yahweh's own chosen king. And then another, the king would speak in the next verse, 7. Let me proclaim Yahweh's decree. He has told me, you are my son. Today I become your father. And then a prophet would speak again for Yahweh. And in Yahweh's name say, ask and I will give you the nations for your heritage, the ends of the earth for your domain. So that would be Yahweh speaking this promise to the David king, the Davidic king. Now, we're going to see more about how the prophets worked in the temple along with the David theology. Let's come back in a minute to continue our study of the Psalms and the prophets. Welcome back. We're talking now about the role of the Levite singers in the temple. Levite singers whom the prophet, whom the chronicler calls prophets. And we saw how in Psalm 2, priests and Levite prophets and the king went back and forth saying different things. Let's take a look at another psalm, also from the coronation of the king. And that's Psalm 110. And this is a very important psalm in the New Testament. It gets quoted again and again and again by Jesus and by the apostles. Now it says in Hebrew, Noum Yahweh Ladoni, Yahweh whispers to my Lord. Now who are they speaking about there? One of the Levite prophets would be saying, Yahweh is whispering or saying to my Lord, that is the king, Adoni. And the words are this. This is what Yahweh's word is to the king. He says, sit at my right hand. Now, one of these Levitical prophets would say that. Sit at my right hand, and I will make your enemies a footstool for you. So that would be the oracle or the word of Yahweh from the prophet Levite, prophetic Levite, as they played instruments during the psalm. Yahweh will force all your enemies under the sway of your scepter in Zion. Royal dignity was yours from the day you were born on the holy mountains. Royal from the womb, from the dawn of your earliest days. Yahweh has sworn an oath which he will never retract. Now, verses 2, all the way to the first half of verse 4, were probably just said by one of the priests. Perhaps the priest who would pour oil on the king's head when he was anointed king, because the pouring of oil is what made the king the king. That was a sign, a sacrament of receiving the Holy Spirit. And for that reason, the king was called Mashiach, or Messiah, because as Messiah means anointed with oil. And then, after he's been anointed with oil, and the king and the priest says, Yahweh will help you against your enemies, in verse 4 he says, you are a priest of the order of Melchizedek forever. So, again, one of these Levite prophets would say that part in the name of Yahweh. He would say to the king, you are a priest in the order of Melchizedek. And the reason for that is this. The order of Melchizedek refers to Melchizedek in Genesis chapter 14, who was the king and priest of Salem. Now, use your imagination. Salem sounds like Jerusalem. Jerusalem means the city of Salem, or that is the city of peace. And so the king of Jerusalem, even though it's David and his family, are priests according to the order of Melchizedek. And that goes on in his family for all generations, to be a priest in the order of Melchizedek, a priest king. And as a matter of fact, in 2 Samuel chapter 6, when David has the Ark of the Covenant brought into Jerusalem, it says that David sacrificed animals as a priest king. So we see him exercising that. And a priest prophet would say that to him. And then it goes on in this psalm, Yahweh is at your right, the Lord is at your right hand. When he grows anger, he shatters kings, he gives nations their deserts, smashing their skulls, he heaps the world wide with corpses. In other words, Yahweh will take care of your enemies, O king. Drinking from the stream as he goes, he can hold his head high in victory. What that means is that there was a stream in the Kidron Valley, and the king would take water from there and drink it before he was became king. Okay? So we see that the prophets and kings were very much associated in the king becoming king. Also, take a look at Psalm 132. Now, this psalm tells the story of the king, David, bringing the Ark of the Covenant over to Jerusalem. And then, after they tell the story of how they found it at Ephrathah, in the fields of the forest, they found the ark over in the southwest corner of the country, and they bring the ark to Jerusalem. Then in verse 11, this is the verse I want you to look at, in Psalm 132, verse 11, it said, Yahweh swore to David and will remain true to his word. So a priest would say that, or sing it in the psalm, and then a Levite prophet would sing the next part. And I promise to your own son shall succeed you on the throne. If your sons observe my commandment, the decrees that I taught them, your sons too shall succeed you on the throne forever. For Yahweh has chosen Zion. He chose Jerusalem, Zion, desiring this to be his home. And Yahweh speaks, again, through a prophet. Here I will stay forever. This is the home I have chosen. Yahweh still speaking, verse 15. I will bless her virtuous people with riches, provide her poor with food, and I will clothe her priests with salvation, and her devout shall shout for joy. And he goes on to give an oracle, still speaking as a priest Levite or a Levite prophet for Yahweh. Here I will make a horn sprout for David. Here I will trim a lamp for my anointed, whose enemies I shall clothe in shame, while his crown bursts into flower. And Psalm 89 is the same kind of thing. It's a story about David and how David was made to be the king forever. And forever in his family, there will be a king. Okay? And a priest prophet or Levite prophet would say that in the name of Yahweh. So we see, as we have seen many other times, that there's a connection between the prophets and the Levites. But that's not all I'd like to talk about. This brings up one of the most important doctrines of the Old Testament as far as we Christians are concerned. Because, first of all, these Psalms, 132, 89, and 110, and Psalm 2, were sung again and again and again in the temple. And the repetition of those Psalms influenced the prophets later on. So that Isaiah had heard these psalms all through his life, whenever there was a new king, and there were many kings in his day. And he has a sense that the Lord has chosen the family of David. And from that, and in part from these psalms, Isaiah has a sense that Yahweh will continue to choose a David king. But in Isaiah's day, the Messiah, the Davidic king, is not so great. He's not always so good. And so, he has a hope for a future Messiah, a future king from the family of David, who will be greater than David, greater than all the other families of David kings. And it's never quite fulfilled until, as we Christians believe, the coming of Jesus. Jesus is that descendant of David who fulfills these prophecies. And he invites us to share in the fulfillment of these promises to David, that we are to be that people that experience Jesus as the fulfillment of all of these prophecies about David, and that we can experience him as the great king of the universe and our personal king. Let us accept these promises and these psalms, and let us celebrate them and sing them with our whole hearts, and knowing that they speak to us of Jesus, our Lord and our King.